Turn to Proverbs 11 and verse 1. I'm going to try to cover two verses tonight, if I have enough time. Proverbs 11:1 says, "A false balance is abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight." A false balance is abomination to the Lord. Let's start by defining the terms. False, when we're speaking of a balance or a measure, means not truly adjusted, incorrect. A balance is an apparatus for weighing, consisting of a beam poised so as to move freely on a central pivot with a scale pan at each end. We've probably all seen balances before. They're not really used a whole lot anymore, probably more in museums and things, but I think everybody's aware of what they are. And a false balance would be one of these things that's not adjusted correctly. It's adjusted incorrectly so that the both sides wouldn't weigh out evenly, and you could use that to screw people, which we'll talk about here in a second. And then an abomination is the feeling or state of mind of combined disgust and hatred, abhorrence, detestation, loathing. So in other words, if we put the definitions into the verse, God hates and is disgusted by a weighing balance, which is intentionally adjusted incorrectly to defraud people in financial transactions. Because that's what they would use it for in those days. People would pay with precious metals, with gold or silver, and especially if they're in probably a long time ago when money was not coined yet and you just have chunks of gold and silver or powder, gold dust or something like that, where it wasn't coined in a specific weight already, you'd have to weigh it out. And if you had the balance falsely adjusted, then you could have somebody put on more gold or silver than what the product they were buying actually cost, and you could, you know, defraud them that way. But more generally, this verse is teaching us that God hates cheating and dishonest dealings, whether it's with a balance that's falsely adjusted or some other means that accomplishes the same thing. God hates dishonest dealings, right? People that do things to manipulate and to take advantage of other people and defraud them. And like I said, during the time that Solomon wrote this proverb, balances were used to weigh goods and commodities such as gold and silver, which were used as money against a known standard weight. So they would have a standardized weight, you know, a piece of metal or something that they knew weighed a shekel, and then somebody would put their silver or their gold on there, a shekel's worth. So there'd be two ways to falsify the balance. You could tinker with it so it wasn't, you know, that, what was it called there, the beam, right? You could tinker with the beam and you move the beam a little bit so it's not evenly weighed, evenly dispersed, and the leverage wasn't right. And as long as somebody didn't see the balance sitting, you know, with one side down before you started, like if you had something sitting underneath it to make it balance out, and then you put the stuff on there and pull the thing out, or however you do it anyway. So you could manipulate the way that the balance is put together, or you could just manipulate the weight that you put on the other side, and you put a weight that actually weighs 3 shekels, and you tell him, you owe me 2 shekels for this barrel of grain, and he puts 2 shekels on there, and you're like, nope, not enough, and then he puts on some more, and then it balances out, and you say that's 2 shekels, except it's actually 3 shekels because you have 3 shekels on the other side, right? So there's two ways of using a false balance there to cheat people. And however it would be done, God hates it all. All right, so I pretty much just said what was in the rest of the outline there. I don't need to repeat that. so this practice is called falsifying a balance by deceit. And this is how it was termed in Amos. Not sure how that's pronounced, but Amos 8 and verses 5 through 6. Amos 8, 5 through 6. The Lord here is condemning these merchant Jews that were only concerned about money. It says, saying, "When will the new moon be gone that we may sell corn, and the Sabbath that we may set forth wheat, making the ephah small and the shekel or shekel great, and falsifying the balances by deceit? that we may buy the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of shoes, yea, and sell the refuse of the wheat. So it appears what they're doing here is they're falsifying the balance. They make the ephah small, which is the volume of measurement, right, of the grain and of the wheat, and they're making the shekel or the shekel great. So they're putting a heavier shekel on there and weighing it out, so you got to put more money on the other side to buy the wheat that you want to buy, so you're overpaying for it. And then on top of that, they make the ephah small, so when they get the volume of wheat that you're supposed to get, it's actually smaller. So they're giving you less wheat than they're telling you they're giving you, and they're taking more money from you than what they're telling you they're taking. And they're buying the poor for silver, so they're taking all their silver, and the needy for a pair of shoes. These poor people are losing everything they have because, you know, they're being defrauded. And they sell the refuse of the wheat, which I think means they kept the extra wheat and they didn't give to the poor guy that they were supposed to, and then they sell that. So they told him they were going to...
It's like triple dishonesty.
Yeah.
Okay, I was thinking it was that on top of all of this, they're selling them
quality,
the lousy part of the wheat.
Well,
but
and that
I
could
mean,
be...
Right.
Well, that could, I'd have to look up the definition of refuse. I think refuse is... The junky stuff. So you could be right. They could be selling the bad stuff.
I could be wrong too.
I was thinking refuse as remainder, but I could be wrong about that. So anyway, what they were doing there is called falsifying the balances by deceit. And this is exactly what Solomon is talking about in Proverbs, that the Lord hates. It's bad enough when you defraud somebody that can afford to be defrauded, but when you defraud the poor, you know, that's a really raunchy thing to do. But, and it's not only the rich that do it. There's a proverb that says, when a poor man oppresseth the poor, it's like a sweeping rain which leaveth no food. So even the poor take advantage of each other. But this practice is also called unrighteousness in judgment in Leviticus 19:35 through 36. Leviticus 19:35 through 36. Now, the same kind of thing goes on today, except they do it with inflation and money printing. And this has been going on forever. The Romans started clipping the coins. They shaved the silver off the edge of the coins, and just so much that you really couldn't tell. But then you take all those shavings, eventually that all adds up. And so they start shaving the coins and putting them back into circulation, and people are spending them like they would, like they were worth what they used to be. Nobody is any the wiser. And meanwhile, they're taking all the shavings, melting them down, and making more coins. And then the government's using those coins to buy whatever they want to buy or fund their military or whatever they're doing, right? It's no different. It's just a different mechanism that they use today. That, by the way, is why they put the little grooves on the edge of the quarters. There's no reason to do it today because, I mean, you'd be an idiot to shave a quarter today to get the zinc and copper and pot metal out of it or whatever. It's worthless. But anyway, they want to make that, they want people to think that money is still money. So they make it look like the old stuff. The Fed's like the chief counterfeiter, right? A counterfeiter is somebody that makes fake money to make it look like real money and pass it off. That's exactly what the Federal Reserve does. They make fake money and pass it off as real money. They take the quarters, take all the silver out of them. They still look like a quarter. And they figured out how to make them weigh the same amount. So when you put it into a pot machine or something, it still works, because if they don't weigh the right amount, when the coin rolls down the thing, however it works inside there, it won't work. So it's got to weigh the same amount. So they have to be very ingenious to figure out how to screw people, and they are. So anyway, and now they can do it a lot easier. They just print it. Actually, they don't even print it. They just put digits in a computer somewhere and credit somebody's account, and that accomplishes the same thing. It's falsifying the balances, because the money that you had, that you earned 10 years ago, if you put it in the bank or under your mattress, when you go to spend it 10 years later, it's worth a lot less. So it's like, wait a second, why do I have to put more money on the balance, in other words, right? I got to keep giving the cashier more money, but when I put this money under my mattress 10 years ago, I could have bought this thing, but now I have to put more on there, right? They falsify the balance. It's the same thing, it's just a different mechanism. Leviticus 19:35-36. It says, "Ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in meat yard, in weight, in measure, just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hin shall ye have. I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt." So to have unjust balances, unjust meat yards, unjust weights, and so on, is an abomination to God. And God commands us to not do that. It's unrighteousness. And I think I have the word just. I'll define it later when we get to the second half of the verse. But I do have that definition for you. And this is how wicked men oppress others with these balances of deceit. Hosea 12 and verse 7. Like I said, this is as old as the hills. When Jesus went into the temple and he cast out the money changers, you know what they were doing? Same old song and dance. You got to have, from what I've read anyway, you got to have the temple currency. And so when people bring their offerings or their beast, and then you couldn't bring your own beast because it wasn't blemish free or it wasn't good enough. You had to buy the beast that they were selling at the temple. And of course, there was a good markup on that beast, and you had to exchange it for the temple currency or whatever. I mean, they were screwing people, is what they were doing. And Jesus cast them out. He hates falsifying the balances by deceit or anything that's similar to it. Hebrews 12 and verse 7, Hosea 12 and verse 7, it says, "He is a merchant," talking about Ephraim, which is another name for Israel. the Jews' proclivities go back a long, long time. "He is a merchant. The balances of deceit are in his hand. He loveth to oppress." And they pretty much haven't changed in, 3,000 years? The people that still own all the big international banking houses are all pretty much Jews, right? The Rothschilds and the Warburgs and all the other big names, the Schiffs and so on. They're all still part of the club, and they've been at this for a long time. Jesus talked about them. It said that their table will be made a snare, and their table is their bank. That's when he overthrew the tables of the money changers, right? That was their banking system. That's where they laid out all the money and all that. So their table is made a snare to them, and I think that's part of the reason why, according to that prophecy there, why they've never come to the knowledge of the truth, because they love money and the pursuit of wealth more than they love the truth of God. And that was one of the reasons why they were turned over to delusion.
Are they real Jews, these rich people that you just mentioned?
Yeah, no, they're, most of them are Khazars.
So claiming to be Jews then?
Yeah, they're Caucasians who converted to Judaism back in the 7th, 8th century of the Khazarian Empire. Most of them, from what I've read, like 90% of them. So, and they're just so-called Jews in name only anyway. I mean, they don't practice their religion or anything, no.
Okay, thank you.
Amos 8, 5-6, which I already read, so I'm not going to read that again. So the point here is that God hates dishonest dealings. And you could say that's really the moral of the proverb. There's always kind of the natural interpretation, which is just the plain, normal meaning, and then you have the deeper meaning behind it, like the moral or the theme or something like that. So the moral of the story here is that God hates dishonest dealings. He hates divers weights and measures and false balances. I got a few verses here for you in Proverbs 20 and verse 10. It's the first one. Proverbs 20. In verse 10, and really the way that they do it too is that they enrich themselves, just like the guys that were falsifying the balances were enriching themselves. and on the backs of the poor that they were cheating. They do the same thing today when they create money out of thin air, because the money gets created and it gets dispersed to the people on the inside. It goes to the big banks. They get it first, and the Wall Street tycoons and people like that. And when they get it, it's worth the current value of the money. So if the Fed prints up $1 billion and hands it out to their friends or however they do it, that $1 billion will buy $1 billion worth of stuff. Well, when they start spending it into the economy and it circulates its way around, eventually there's just $1 billion more of extra money in the economy now, and prices just go up commensurate because there's more money chasing the same amount of stuff, and eventually the prices go up, and so that extra added money doesn't help anybody, because the average Joe Blow's got 100 extra bucks in his pocket and everything costs 100 extra dollars, so it didn't help him at all. The guys that got the money first, right, they were able to spend it at the value that it actually was when they got it before it diluted the rest of the money supply. But what happens to the poor schlobs is that they get their extra 100 bucks, but any money that they have saved is now worth a lot less because the whole money supply has been diluted. So that's what inflation actually is. And so there's the more money there is floating around out there, then prices go up commensurate with it. And so it benefits the people that get it first. And, you know, the rest of us, it doesn't benefit at all. It just wrecks our savings.
Is it going to be the same with digital currency that
I'm sure it'll be a lot worse, because it's a lot easier to manipulate that. And then they can have complete control if they have a digital currency, because they can just turn your account off. They can take money out of it whenever they want. They can just, if you're not behaving yourself, they can just make it so you can't transact, and like social credit score stuff like they have in China. And yeah,
that's so bad.
That's what they're moving towards, the central bank digital currencies, as they call them. Anyway, Proverbs 20 and verse 10. You know, but the Bible's up to date. I mean, they've been doing the same kind of thing for a long time. God called them out on it thousands of years ago. Proverbs 20 and verse 10 says, "Divers weights," which means different ones, "divers weights and divers measures, both of them are alike abomination to the Lord." So when you've got a bunch of weights, they better all weigh the same thing. You don't have certain weights that you use for your friends, certain weights that you use for the public, and certain weights you use for your enemies, right? You have the same weight. You treat everybody the same. You don't charge some people more without them knowing it and cheat them. These things are all an abomination to God. He hates that kind of thing. Proverbs 20 and verse 23. Proverbs 20:23, "Divers weights are an abomination unto the Lord, and a false balance is not good." And those two things go together. The divers weights and the false balance are both used, as I've just explained, to defraud. Let's look at Deuteronomy 25:13-16. Deuteronomy 25. And the founders of our country were well familiar with these banking practices, and they wanted nothing to do with it. For one thing, they experienced the inflation of the continental. That's where that phrase, where the saying "ain't worth a continental" or "not worth a continental" comes from, because they so inflated the continental was the currency during the Revolutionary War. They so inflated it to pay for the war that it just became worthless. And so they had that experience, and they also knew of historical experiences as well. And that's why they put in the Constitution that no state shall make anything legal tender except for gold and silver coins. That's actually in the Constitution. The only thing that a state is allowed to make legal tender is gold and silver coins, and the federal government has the power to coin money and to regulate the value thereof. There is no allowance for paper money in the Constitution. They strictly forbid it. Of course, they've gotten around it with the Federal Reserve and all that. The other thing was, the country was never set up with a central bank. like the Federal Reserve is our central bank, and pretty much almost every country in the world now has a central bank, which is like a bank of banks, and it can allow all the banks to cheat equal, and if one of them cheats a little too much and they get in trouble, then they can funnel money to them so that that bank doesn't go under and all that. The founders didn't. There was not a central bank until Alexander Hamilton talked George Washington into starting one, and then that went for 20 years, and then they. There was a break where they didn't have a central bank. Then they had the second central bank, and then Andrew Jackson killed the second central bank. And he had his faults, certainly, but one of his good points was he hated the bankers, and he got rid of that thing. And then we didn't have a central bank from, I think it was like 1836 the whole way until 1913, so a long time in this country we didn't have a central bank. During Abraham Lincoln's administration, they went back to money printing with the greenbacks, and screwed a bunch of people again. But then after the Civil War, then that was done away with. And then there was a period there from late 1860s, the whole way up until 1913. No central bank. We were on a gold and silver, or a gold standard. And it was the most prosperous period in this nation's history on the gold standard. And without any paper money. So.
Well, in my quiz, that was the answer. One of the duties of the state, I think, is to print.
To print, right? Yeah.
That was the answer in my.
When she took her citizenship quiz, that was one of the answers. That was supposedly the right answer. Yes. What is one of the duties of the federal government? To print money. It's like, no, it's not. That is a flat out lie. Read the Constitution.
Unless you want the point, then right. It's to print money.
Yeah. Oh, this drove me crazy. Anyway, Deuteronomy 25, 13 through 16. But the thing is with the founders, not only did they have a good knowledge of history, they'd studied the Greeks and the Roman societies and republics, and they had a really good understanding of history and money and all that, but they also had a good understanding of the Bible. And they knew from the Bible that gold and silver is money in the Bible, and that God... condemns anybody that, you know, would mess around with money and faking the value of it to rip people off. So those guys had a lot of wisdom. Deuteronomy 25, 13 through 16. It says, "Thou shalt not have in thy bag divers weights, a great and a small." Like I was saying, you know, for your friends and your enemies, or your friends and the general public. You know, your buddy comes up and you got the small weight and you say, "Hey, that's 3 shekels," and you put one that only weighs 1 shekel and he's only got to weigh out one, right? And then the general public comes in, you pull out your 4 shekel one and you tell him, "Hey, it's a shekel," and he puts a shekel on there and he's got to keep putting more and more and more, whatever. So anyway, not supposed to have a great and a small. "Thou shalt not have in thine house divers measures, a great and a small. Thou shalt have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and just measure shalt thou have, that thy days may be lengthened in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. For all that do such things, and all that do unrighteously, are an abomination unto the Lord thy God." Look at all the verses we've read, a number of them, probably at least a half a dozen of them here, that talk about this divers weights, divers measures, and a false balance, and how God hates it. It's all through the Bible. And God considers false balances to be wicked. In Micah 6, 10 through 11. Micah 6, 10 through 11. 921. What? Yeah. I'll find it. Micah 6, 10 through 11. Says, "Are there yet the treasures of wickedness in the house of the wicked, and the scant measure that is abominable? Shall I count them pure with the wicked balances and with the bag of deceitful weights?" So he calls the money that they've amassed, the treasures of wickedness, scant measures, are abominable, so scant, like a measure that's not measuring enough. Mm-hmm. So when you're giving somebody something, you're giving them less than you're saying. And wicked balances and deceitful ways, which is interesting because, I mean, technically speaking, a balance is not a moral entity, so it can't really do evil things or good things. So, but it's called a wicked balance because people use the balance for wickedness. So the poor balance is really getting condemned when the balance technically is just a bunch of elements and he didn't really do anything wrong, but he's called wicked here because of what he's used for. Kind of like people call it, you know, they think guns are wicked, right? But, you know. Yeah. But, you know, God's point here is that, you know, people are using these things for wicked, and he's calling the things themselves wicked, representing the people. Kind of like how it refers to our members as, like, you know, cutting off your members to stop from sinning, like cutting off your hand if it offends you or something. It's talking about what the hand does, not the hand itself is not right, condemned, but it's what your spirit is making the hand do. So what we can learn from this is that God hates corrupt business and commerce. He doesn't hate business and commerce. He hates corrupt business and commerce. Nothing wrong with business and commerce. It's a wonderful thing. If it wasn't for that, we'd all be living off the land and living in extreme poverty. Yeah, exactly. Now, another form of falsifying a balance is by deceptively convincing an ignorant seller that his item's worthless and is in poor condition in order to get him to sell it to you for less than it's worth. Proverbs 20 and verse 14. So this would just be another type of a falsification of a balance, so to speak. Proverbs 20 verse 14, it is not, saith the buyer, but when he has gone his way, then he boasteth. It's kind of a funny verse if you think about it, because if we haven't seen somebody do that before, it's pretty easy to imagine some shyster doing that. Now, when he says it is not, what he's saying is that it's of no worth or value, good for nothing, worthless, useless, bad, or poor. Now, I used to think that not meant nothing. And I was right, if it's speaking of a noun. When you read the word not in the Bible, like he brings to not the things that are, brings to nothing. Not an adjective as it's used here. It is not, so describing the thing, right? As an adjective, it means good for nothing or worthless or bad condition or something. I remember hearing a preacher make this point. And at the time, I thought it was a real eye-opener until I realized that he technically wasn't right. He said that when you, that the word not, N-O-U-G-H-T, means nothing, and N-A-U-G-H-T means bad or good for nothing. And then he made that point here. And I thought, oh, that's really neat, because I always thought he's saying it's nothing. And then, you know, he's gone his way and he's boasting about what he got. He's saying it's bad, it's in bad condition, and therefore it's not worth anything. But the preacher was wrong. Because the word not, N-O-U-G-H-T, and N-A-U-G-H-T, are the same word. They're just spelled differently. Both of those words in the noun form mean nothing. Both of those words in the adjective form mean good for nothing or bad or poor or something like that. So that's the story on that. But anyway, I do think that preacher, because it was an eye-opener that of what this verse was talking about, which is what I was kind of confused about, prior to that. So you can pretty easily see how something like this could happen. Like, for instance, let's say a woman's husband dies and she's left a widow and he had a toolbox out in the garage and she didn't know a first thing about tools or anything, and it's a box in the front of it says Snap-on, and that kind of sounds cheap, like tools that snap together or something. And all the tools in there are Snap-on, probably some junk things, right? And she goes to Sears, if that's still a thing, and she looks at Craftsman tools, if those are still a thing. I don't know, I haven't shopped for tools in decades. But she goes there, and she's like, oh, okay, you know, a ratchet costs $10 or something, if that's what they cost anymore. And she's thinking, okay, you know, new price on these Snap-on tools, $10 probably max, what this ratchet's worth. And some guy comes along and says, oh, yeah, that thing, this aren't worth anything. You know, it's poor quality, whatever. I'll give you, you know, $2 for that ratchet. And she's like, well, you know, I mean, 80% off. These things are old. It's probably not a bad deal. What she doesn't know is that Snap-on ratchet probably cost $200, like 10 or 20 times what the Craftsman does, because they're that much better quality. But she doesn't know that. She didn't have any idea. And so that guy walks off, and as soon as he gets down the driveway, then he's calling his friend up and saying, you wouldn't believe this. I just got a Snap-on toolbox full of tools for $200, and it's worth $20,000 or whatever, you know. So that's the kind of thing, you know, that Solomon here is talking about. So God hates such deceitful dealings. Yeah, you want to get sticker shock, you go look at Snap-on tools sometimes. A wrench, you probably pay $100 for. A wrench. Yeah, I'm not even kidding you. I used to be able to get sweet deals on that when I was in college because they had a Snap-on had a deal with the school because there were tradesmen that did auto mechanics, and I could get the stuff 50% off, which is still probably three times as much as regular tools. But so I'd save up my money and buy as many as I could because that was a smoking deal back then. But anyway, let's get to the second half of the proverb. But a just weight is his delight. Just, when we're talking about a calculated result, measure, amount, number, date, etc., is exact as opposed to approximate. Also with defining word, as it's used here, the defining word just weight. That is exactly what is designated, the exact. Of an instrument, natural action, etc., it's exact or uniform in operation, regular, even. It's corresponding exactly in amount, duration, position, etc., equal, even, level, and it's also characterized by or involving exact correspondence. So when he talks about a just weight, he's talking about a weight that is exact. It's precise. If it's supposed to weigh 2 shekels, it weighs exactly 2 shekels. You know, or if we talked about just measurements and ephahs and meat yards and all that, if it's supposed to be a gallon, it's exactly a gallon, right? It's not 3 quarts. Or if it's supposed to be a yard, it's exactly a yard. It's not 34 inches or whatever, right? That's what a just weight or a just measure is, something that is exact and precise. Now, a weight is a standard of quality determined by or employed in weighing. If we're speaking of a standard of quality determined by or employed in weighing, it is,
Pardon me, quantity.
What did I say?
Quality.
Oh, quantity. A standard of quantity determined by or employed in weighing. It's a standard of weight. A piece of metal or other substance weighing a known amount and identical with one of the units or with a multiple or aliquot. Aliquot, I have to look that one up later, part of a unit in some recognized scale. So I think we all know what a weight is, right? It's a piece of metal or substance that has a known weight to it. And it says a just weight is his, that is God's, delight. And delight is the fact or condition of being delighted, pleasure, joy, or gratification felt in a high degree, anything in which one takes delight or which affords delight, an object of delight, a source of great pleasure or joy. Which is interesting. I don't know why. You're not supposed to use a word to define a word and use delight there a couple times to define it. And it even used it as a noun, which affords delight. Yeah, so, anyway, that's kind of strange, but I think they kind of broke the dictionary rules there, but mm-hmm. What do they know? They're only the guys that wrote the OED, so mm-hmm. They don't know much about dictionaries. Mm-hmm. So in other words, an exact and accurate weight that is used to facilitate fair trade and commerce brings God great pleasure and joy. Now, most people would think, God doesn't care about business. God doesn't care about commerce. God doesn't care about money. Money's evil, right? That's filthy lucre. God doesn't care. God actually despises money. God just wishes we would all just live out there in the state of nature and trade apples for oranges and not even have money because money's just bad and evil, right? That's how these commies think. That's not how God thinks at all. Matter of fact, God loves money when it's just and right and used correctly. Money's a good thing. God doesn't hate business and commerce. On the contrary, God loves honest business and commerce. Because after all, what is business but one person creating something and trading it to somebody else for something that he wants more than the thing that he just made, and it enriches both of their lives, right? Business and commerce is not a bad thing. Unjust, evil, wicked business and commerce, you know, is a bad thing, but just and right commerce, that's a good thing. God only hates corrupt business and commerce. And he loves good business and commerce. So you can be a Christian businessman and you can please God just like you do when you go to church and sing hymns to him. You go and work hard and produce a product and sell it to somebody else that makes their life better and you make money doing that. You can do it to the glory of God. Nothing wrong with that whatsoever. We're told in Proverbs 16:11, that'd be an easy verse reference to remember, right? 16:11, like the AV 16:11, the King James. We're told in Proverbs 16:11 that a just weight and balance are the Lord's. Proverbs 16 and verse 11. It says, a just weight and balance are the Lord's. All the weights of the bag are his work. A weight and balance is what you use for trade and commerce and dealing with money. Right? And it says they're the Lord's. Lord loves honest money. He likes hard money. He likes gold and silver. That's the kind of money that he set forth in the Bible. He didn't like paper money, I don't think. I'm sure he doesn't like that. That's dishonest money. Those who use a just weight and balance are following God's ways and precepts. Because a just weight and balance are the Lord's, all the weights of the bag are his work. So if you use just weights and balances and you have honest dealings with people, you are following God's ways and his precepts. And those who do so are God's delight. Proverbs 11 and verse 20. They that are of a froward heart are abomination to the Lord, but such as are upright in their way are his delight. So when you have upright dealings in business or in life, you delight God. You know, if you treat people right, if you stick to your word, if you tell them you're going to do a certain thing for a certain price, and even when you realize that, oh, this was harder than I thought, oh, boy, this thing broke and I didn't expect that, and you still do it for the price you told him, even if you lose your shirt on it. God likes that kind of thing. He likes honest and just dealings. God delights in those who exercise judgment and righteousness. Jeremiah 9 and verse 24. Jeremiah 9 and verse 24. This is where the Lord tells the wise man not to glory in his wisdom, and the mighty man not to glory in his might, and the rich man not to glory in his riches. But let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me, that I am the Lord, which exercise loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith the Lord. God delights in judgment and righteousness, just dealings, being honest and not defrauding people. God delights in that. He commands the use of just balances and just weights and measures in Ezekiel 45, 10 through 12. Ezekiel 45, 10 through 12. Says, ye shall have just balances, and a just ephah, and a just bath. The ephah and the bath shall be of one measure, that the bath may contain the tenth part of an homer, or an omer. And the ephah, the tenth part of an omer. The measure thereof shall be after the omer. And the shekel shall be 20 gerahs, 20 shekels, 5 and 20 shekels, 15 shekels, shall be your minay. We don't really use those measurements now, so they probably don't mean a ton to us, but you get the point, I think, that you're supposed to have measurements that are accurate, and there's, you know, a certain measure is supposed to have a certain number of other measurements in it, right? Be like God saying you shall have 4 quarts in your gallon or whatever, you know, that same kind of thing. So God's, you know, he's really particular about that kind of thing because it's important, because there's a greater principle at stake here. It's cheating people, robbing people from, you know, taking things from them that are not yours. And those that deal truly using just weights are just men and are God's delight. I've got a couple of verses for you, and then we'll be done with this verse tonight. And I think we're going to be done entirely tonight because this verse took longer than I thought it would. Proverbs 12, verse 22. Proverbs 12:22 says, lying lips are abomination to the Lord, but they that deal truly are his delight. Just remember that. People lie to make money. They lie to get themselves out of trouble so that they don't lose money, right? They lie about all kinds of things. But dealing truly, even when it costs, will bring God delight. And I'll give you one more. Ezekiel 18 and verse 9. Ezekiel 18 and verse 9. And that would go also for employees. It's not just the rich people that screw people. Employees that rob their employers, either physically taking stuff or just rob them in time when they pay you to be there for 8 hours and, you know, four of them, you're sitting there texting on your phone or something, right? That's a false balance. That's falsifying the balances by deceit, because you've supposedly put 8 hours on your side of the balance, and the boss is putting the money on the other side of the balance that 8 hours equals. And guess what? You've used a small IFA, right? There's not 8 hours on that side of the balance. There's, you know, 7 or 6 or 1. And this is getting to be a big problem with all this work from home stuff. And people are realizing this, and that's why, like, Elon Musk, when he took over Twitter, he told them, no working from home, period. You want to work from home, you're fired. And bringing them all back to the office. And then you have people that's, what is it called? It's called, there's a term for it, where they will do, when they're working from home, they'll do just enough to kind of fly under the radar, where they're not really doing anything, but they're doing just enough. They're getting the right reports in or whatever they do. And then they're actually have multiple full-time jobs, and they're doing just barely enough to get by with both full-time jobs, working from home and raking in the cash. And there's a name for it. I forget. But anyway, I mean, are you surprised? I mean, come on. Fallen nature of man. You could, if you can get away with doing nothing, there's a lot of people that would do that very thing. And if you can get away with doing nothing twice and get paid twice for it, there's a lot of people out there that are going to do that.
But Pastor Wagner, would it be okay for an employer, let's say he has done all the tasks already, and he still has a few hours left?
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay if he rests during those few hours, or should he try to do something related to work?
No,
he has already done all the tasks given to him.
Well, it depends. If you're being paid by the job or being paid by the hour. If you're being paid by the hour.
By the job.
Well, by the job, then yeah, you get the job done, you're done, right? But if you're being paid by the hour, you get the job done, you go back to the boss and ask, what do you want me to do now? Ezekiel 18 and verse 9 says, hath walked in my statutes. He's talking about a good man here. Hath walked in my statutes and hath kept my judgments to deal truly. He is just. He shall surely live, saith the Lord. The man that keeps his judgments and deals truly is a just man that will be blessed with life from the Lord. So that takes care of Proverbs 11 and verse 1. And we'll have to pick it up with verse 2 the next time. Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.